Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We give you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, so that you can go back and listen to any of the guests that we've had in over 4 years of doing this program. Still boggles the mind. I have to share with you in terms of what's been transpiring over this past week as we are here heading towards Thanksgiving next Thursday. I've had the opportunity to produce some programs and listen to some conversation, very interesting to say the least. And the people involved are very nice folks, and I enjoy talking with them, and just it's a wonderful thing. And yet the conversation within the context of the programs, as I listen to some of these programs, and we're doing a series of like 12, seemed so inconsequential, I think is the best way to put it. Just not really relevant to what's real out there. And yes, we sometimes feel we need distractions to take us away from the real world. And yet, the real world that we think we want to distract ourselves from isn't even real. And we talk about that in the context on this program of the interior life, as it's referred to. Well, that's what we're going to talk more about today on our program. A return guest, very glad to have her back on the program. Wonderful to have the opportunity to talk with her again. Flo Magdalena with soulsupportsystems.org, and she has also written several books. And I Remember Union, I believe, was one of them. Flo, welcome back to our program.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm actually doing very well. It's extraordinary, those things that happen in our lives that take us in different directions, and we wonder what's going to happen next, and then there are times when it doesn't matter. I think about people who are concerned over, say, the economy, you know, and say 10 years ago, when things weren't excellent, but nonetheless, and nobody knew what the future was, and yet we pressed on and we did our thing and we overcame, and it was a great thing. And for some reason, and I think I know what the reason is, but for some reason, now here we are in a sort of a similar, maybe some would say more dire situation. We can't seem to overcome. It's kind of strange. Can you elucidate a little on that from your perspective?
Well, I've had, as I was sharing with you before the call, I've had some really personal kinds of challenges happen this year, and I'm aware of many, many people who are facing challenges that have to do specifically with what they're here to learn. And in my experience, you know, you teach what you're here to learn, and you experience in any realm of your relationships with others, what comes up are those aspects of the design, the shadow of ourselves and the light within ourselves, and what it is that we're actually learning here, and how we're going to find that, let's just say, the meat of the nut or the key to actualizing our own purpose and potential and showing up in our lives in a very present way. And my experience this year was very personal in the sense that my dad died in June, and what I could very much be appreciating was my training, my self-training in moving into my center and in being clear about my soul's purpose and my soul's design. And I wanted to just give you a little bit of information about that, and your listeners actually talk to you about what happened as he died and after he died, because it actually supports my intention for being on the planet. It was actually one of the things that has been the most definitive and accurate validation of some of the premises that I teach and some of the things that seem important as human beings for us to not just understand but grab hold of and really deeply understand within ourselves.
And many of our listeners will know, too, that it is also a subject that is, if I can put it this way, near and dear to my heart, because I am abundantly curious, inquisitive about this whole process. Every time someone of note or someone I know who passes on, my first thought is, I wonder what they're experiencing. What are they doing now? Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. So please share with us. I'm very intrigued.
Well, you remember from I Remember Union, I began the book in 1989 after I had an experience with Mary Magdalene and with Christ. And when I wrote the book, Magdalene was apparently in her lifetime, she was a midwife. She worked with the birthing of the souls. And so she created this ability, I guess, to actually be with people in their deepest and most profound moments and then bring them through those moments so that they can see their life as something that has purpose and value and also see where they belong. And she talks a lot about listening to the inner vibration or essence of who you are versus the outer conditioning. And we see now how important it is not to focus so much on the outer conditioning, but to be very clear about who we are, why we're here, and how to stand in that. And so she also told us about the seat of light, which is this place right underneath the heart where we can access that purpose and that soul seed. And she called it the seat of light. So I had these ideas, and I've been expounding on them and purporting them and putting them out as an epistemology for many years now. And the other thing that she has really used in terms of birthing when we birth children is after they're born to tell them that they're light and that light they will remain. So it's a three-sentence thing. It's, I am light, and light I shall remain. Or for a child, you are light, and light you shall remain. And I had these in my toolbox. I'm walking around and this is my idea of what's real. And, other people may think about other kinds of ways of translating that, but for me that was what was real. So my dad and my mom and my family, my brother and his partner and my kids and I were going to go to the beach at the end of June, on June 23rd. And so I drove down with my husband from Vermont, which is where I live, to where my dad lives in New Jersey. And within 40 minutes of my arrival, he had a stroke. And it was a what they call platelet stroke. So he was able to recover. We got him oxygen. I'm a nurse. So, we got a lot of things right there that he needed. And so he came back to talk with us, and he had no residual damage. And we had two really great days with him. And then on Saturday, would have been the 25th or 26th. Basically, he had another stroke, and he did not come back from that stroke. He did not regain consciousness after that stroke. Now, what I can tell you, Richard, was really interesting. We took him into the ICU unit, and so I sat with him. He was on a morphine drip so that he didn't suffer, and he had vaporized oxygen, but that's all we did just to keep him comfortable. And as I was sitting there, I looked into where the soul seat is, which is right under, as I say, underneath the heart. And what I saw was a milky substance, and it was on both sides of the center of his body, and it went out horizontally. And I could see it. It was as if it was a vapor moving on both sides. And so what I know about my dad is that he was extremely logical. He worked for DuPont for over 50 years. He was a Marine. He was at Iwo Jima. He was a Christian. And although he loved me very much and was very supportive of me in many, many different ways, he didn't understand this epistemology that I talked about. And so it was the kind of thing where I was working with him in his field of energy and knowing that he hadn't specifically during his lifetime understood how to work on that energy himself, how to clear it, how to open it, or so forth. He prayed, but in the sense of his body being an energy vehicle, there was, in the last year or so, an opportunity for me to work with him, and he would accept healing from me in the last year or so. But prior to that, and in terms of his understanding of it, I'm not sure how that went. So when I'm sitting with him in the ICU, what I did mentally was to take the vapor that was rising up from the center of his body on both sides, and then it rose up, from the center of his body, and it rose up above him. And I just started to clear it mentally, as if I could take both hands and move them from the center of his body out to the sides of his body. And I did that from the top to the bottom, and I kept doing that as I was sitting there. And I worked with him in different ways over the next several days, and they transferred him to the palliative care unit on Saturday evening. And so he was there from on from Sunday and Monday, and he died Tuesday morning. And for 3 days almost, he was breathing four times a minute. And so he was kind of hanging in that balance. And I saw that he had a lot of feeling of responsibility. He was really focused on us and really kind of hanging there. And then I saw that there were, my grandmother and my grandfather were coming, and they were moving him up. All I could think of was a corridor or a gateway, and they were moving him up, and then they would place light behind him so that when he turned around, he couldn't really see us as clearly. And they were putting more and more distance between us because he was an extremely responsible, loving person. He'd been taking care of my mom for at least 10 years. She has a lot of arthritis and alignment problems, and she falls a lot and so forth. And he was a very amazing caretaker for her for a long time. And so as he's going up, they're basically making it more and more challenging for him to turn around and for him to see us at this level. And so they kept moving him and moving him up. And after a time, I saw that they actually, there was one last time when he turned around, and then they closed the gate and he couldn't turn around again. And then the next day he died. And I woke up and I knew that we needed to get to the hospital, that we had my granddaughter coming, and we did all these different kinds of things. And so we got to the hospital 10 minutes after he died, and we were at a hospital that's holistic hospital, and it's in Ridgewood, New Jersey. And all the staff have gone through Birchtree holistic care understanding and training, so they're very heart-centered, and there's aromatherapy and Reiki and all kinds of things happening in that hospital. It's very lovely. So we walked onto the floor, and we went in to see my dad, and I was with my brother and his partner, and they're actually Wiccan, and so they also work with energy and consciousness. So we went in to see my dad, and it was amazing because he was still my dad, even though his body had died. It was such a lovely experience. And so I went over to the seat of light, and I thought, well, I'll try to figure out what's going on here and what's happening with the soul. So I put my hand underneath his heart, and I didn't feel very much, but his heart was really warm. And I said to the boys, let's put our hands on his heart and see what happens. I think we're supposed to do that. So I put my left hand on his heart, and immediately, Richard, the love in his heart came through my hand, my fingers in my hand, into my arm, into my heart, and into my whole body. And it suffused me with this amazing, pure love. And it came into all three of us as we're standing there. And then my dad began to lift us to show us where he was. And he lifted us into the light. And it was as if we were on an elevator going up to the highest points of consciousness. And he moved with us, and he held us at the same time. And I heard things in my awareness. You know, I heard him say, oh, this is what you do. like he was understanding, like this was something that he could grasp. You know, when you talk about metaphysics and you talk about energy and you talk about all this spiritual idea, if it's not religious and God isn't in the forefront and there isn't the scriptures to back it up and so forth, there's this skepticism and sometimes doubt about the validity of it. And one of the most meaningful things for me was that my dad got me. He understood this is what energy work is, this is what consciousness is, this is how it works. And then I got this thought also, and he said something like, well, you know, I've done this before. I kind of understand. I didn't do it in this lifetime, but yeah, I can know that I could master this. And that was the kind of the last thought that came through my mind. And then we just kept rising and rising into the light. And we went to a place where he dissolved and we dissolved, and consciousness was pure oneness, nothing else. And it, to me, because I'm a very logical person, and I was actually glad when I started to write books that my father could say I was an author versus a metaphysician, you know. It was a good, definite validation of that we are light, we return to light. And, you know, my dad was very obsessive. He was very worried all the time. Right before he had his stroke, he said, you know, what should I do about this and this? And what I want to share is the fact that no matter what his mental state was and no matter what his experience on earth was, he went home and he went to this place where he was completely welcomed as light and returned to the light. And I talked to you a little bit about the fact that I remember Union is being made into a film, and one of the things we're really focusing on is this thing called the design, so that we can think about, okay, so what did we really come to do, and how can we do that, and where do we get that information from? Mm-hmm. Well, we get the information from the Swing Between Worlds, and the Swing Between Worlds is going to be very developed in the film. We're going to really show what it's like to get the assignment, to completely decide and choose what it is you want to learn and experience and teach. And then on the other hand, when you go back, the cherishing that happens when you choose what you're going to do in your life is matched when you return, no matter what you've done. So when we talk about no judgment, you know, this is real.
Yeah.
This is a place in consciousness where we are absolutely cherished. And I use that word because it's the best word to use.
Extraordinary experience, one that only can be experienced. It certainly loses something in the hearing, because you certainly experienced it, so there's nothing lost from your perspective. But from ours, as we listen and are enthralled, at least as I am, and quite intrigued about what you saw and heard and felt, you know, there's still, it's almost as though I've even said this, that I'm not in any hurry. I'm not a depressed person, so I'm not in any hurry to leave this world. But I am so curious. I would love to, you know, slip over to the other side for just a little while, see what it's like, you know, and then slip back. And I know there are those who say, well, yes, but those are called out-of-body experiences. No, it's not quite the same thing. Even as it's been explained to me by people who experience them, or even near-death experiences, because there's a finality to it. You're not going back into that body again. It's like I sold that Metro, or I crashed it into a Mustang, and it's totaled, and it's going to the junkyard, and now I have to get a new car. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting back into that Metro again.
And the conscious mind is not any longer able to function in the same way either. So there's a complete shift of realities, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, this actually raises some very interesting interesting points and perspectives for me as we talk further. And our listeners have heard me muse about some of these things over the last year or two. It's been an interesting transformation for me as I take a look at this process, not only of transitioning, as I like to call it, but also in terms of the profound questions that we ask ourselves. I mean, for some reason, you know, in my 50s, I'm now asking the profound questions. Why are we here? Why am I here? Where am I going? Where have I come from? And so forth. But one of the things that's kind of struck me, and I'd like for you to expound, if you could, from your perspective, because I know there's another story in here that we want to get to as well. But this has to do with where we came from, based upon all of the great wisdom teachings down through the millennium, where we are going, and the type of life that we're living today. It is said that we come from the One. We come from the universal source, that we are part therein or thereof, and that we are here experiencing duality. When you're with the One, there is no duality. All there is what there is. There is no contrast and compare. Here in this world, there's contrast and compare. There's light, dark, good, bad, up, down, left, right, etc. And we're going back to the One, which I've already described. So my perplexity has to do, Flo, with then why, if we were the One, if we already had omniscience, omnipresence, and all of those things, what was the whole point of having these experiences? Because that's how I would, you know, fine-tune it down, not necessarily to learn lessons per se, just in a broad sense to have experiences. If we're going back to the One anyway, we were God. We were the universal power, the entity of the of all that is and was and ever will be. There was no time or space. And so that perplexity has I've been pondering that for almost a year and a half.
Well, Mary Magdalene has been talking to us about this, what she calls the origin, and we're writing a book called The Great Mother about this book. And the energy that she talks about is that we were light, we came from that original point of light, and we were like points of light, let's just say points of light. And the points of light are dancing in the universe. And then another point of light comes up and dances with us. And then more points of light come up and dance with us. And as we began to aggregate or come together in that more and more sculpted or larger container of light,
mm-hmm.
As that began to multiply and magnify, there was density that formed. And the density that formed began to obscure the light. And so we've moved in terms of our evolution from pure light into carbon, which is, some people think of carbon as darkness or shadow, and we're moving back into the light. And what she says is that no matter what we do or don't do, we're moving, our consciousness is moving to light, and species is moving, and there's evolution moving, and there's a tide moving to return us to that space. And the interesting thing about that consciousness is that when one recognizes that the shadow inside is a reflection of the light that we carry, and that both of those things are, in a very amazing way, unified to bring us both sides of consciousness, then we are able to support that in our experience and choose to see both sides of the coin, or the light and the dark, or whatever we call it. And in that moment, then we are in the oneness in form. And she talks about, and we all, I think, agree that one of the reasons we incarnate is to experience the pleasures of the earth, to experience our bodies, to experience nature, and to be able to love in a way that reflects the memory of the light and the oneness and the consciousness. I had the occasion to look at a video recently called The Quickening, and it talks about individuals and moving into the space of learning, and once that we learn not just that we are the same, that oneness is a real and intelligible kind of thing, because we all, I think, in a philosophical sense, say, okay, so I want peace in my heart, I want peace in my family, I just want to take care of my family, I really just want to be safe and make my family safe and create a life that works for me and maybe live some of the dreams I have inside. And, I'm not asking for a lot, I just really want to be able to create something that's in harmony with who I am. And so as we think about oneness, sometimes it's this idea, well, no, we don't judge anymore, and we have to accept this person, we have to forgive that person, we have to do this, we have to do that. Well, in this movie, The Quickening, they actually highlighted George W. Bush, and they said, okay, so there will be a time when George W. Bush looks at his actions and sees what they were, sees what the benefits and the reprehensible things were, how many people were damaged by choices he made, and so forth, and he'll see the basic karma of it, or the way that the cause and effect worked in his consciousness. But that will not be what transforms him. What will transform him is the rest of humanity looking at him in love, knowing that he played a role to bring us back to this experience of oneness or consciousness. So oneness is basically, as I'm seeing it now, if I think about my shadow actually being my friend and having conversations, I just did a program in England really working on the shadow, and it's so freeing, because if we look at what trips us up and we look at it authentically, then we don't have any inner fear about what we're going to do to for some reason, to trip ourselves up, mm-hmm. to have the sense that, I'm not going to succeed because of this, or I'm not going to be able to do that because of that. The idea that the shadow is the messenger about what we can look at and then take responsibility for, and just in terms of understanding it, and that we're not projecting anything out or blaming anything out. And then the shadow and the light then become unified in us, and then we are experiencing in that moment ourselves as light. And light and love, I'm thinking these days, basically are interchangeable, you know, because as soon as we feel either one of those things, the other one is present. If we feel light, love is present. If you feel love, light is present. You know, we light, and when we're loving, we're light. We're lighter. And as we think about that, I think the oneness, the idea of oneness in form, then means that we get to appreciate how everybody made this amazing drama up and created all of these different aspects of learning, and it's so complex and intricate.
Yeah. It is.
And to look at it without judgment and say, okay, so that person did that, so that's, they're learning that, and this, and the more attachment we have to how things are, of course, the more we set ourselves up to be disappointed or have expectations that aren't fulfilled or, you know, whatever else it is.
It sounds an awful lot like the oneness, if we can give it that name, wanted a vacation from being the oneness. That was the thought that came to mind was, just, I'm tired of doing, I need some rest, I need some vacation. So it took, from our perspective, several million years off and split itself up into multiple segments and did the things that we are experiencing here. And that, of course, is a summation based upon some of the ancient wisdom teachings that I have read and people that I've spoken with on this program. Flo Magdalene is my guest, and we are talking about the work that she is up to, the work she is doing. She's mentioned a movie. She has a book called I Remember a Union. We'll talk more about that as well, as some other experiences that she has had, and hopefully they will support and encourage and enlighten you as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm with Flo Magdalena with soulsupportsystems.org, and we're talking about a lot of different things here on the program. We left off talking about, I suppose, for lack of a better term, God, the oneness, the universal power, the force. You can give it any name you want. It's where we came from. It's where we're going back to. And it's because that's our home, if you will. And you made that reference to your father on his passing, and that he went home. And I often wonder if some of the thoughts are true or not, whether we actually see relatives, but yes, they're relatives, but we've lived many lifetimes, as some feel. So it's like, okay, well, the last set of relatives you had were, but these people, you've been playing this, you've been playing on this stage with the same group of people or same group of entities for centuries, you know. And so basically you guys get together and reminisce about, oh, wasn't it wonderful when we did these things and those things? And then you move on and you do it all again if you choose to. Is that kind of how you feel in terms of, say, your father? I mean, coming back again sometime, maybe even in your lifetime?
Well, my grandfather did come from my father. And then when that was before he had his second stroke, we felt him around. And then as he was making his way, which took him days, you know, to do, and I have the sense of deliberateness about that, that he really was working through different levels of consciousness as he was moving through. And then my grandmother came at the end when I told you about the idea that he could not any longer turn around and be responsible. He had to go on to his next step. And so I had a sense that he recognized them. And one of the things I didn't share, when he was having his stroke, he also had a seizure. And I knew it was a stroke because I'd seen him have the stroke a couple days before, and his right side got heavy. And even though he was having a seizure, I could see the stroke happening. And he held out his left hand, Richard, into the air, and he kept reaching with his left hand. And so I think that when we make that passage, that those people who are familiar to us in this embodiment come to be with us in that transference. Of course, they were together many times in many different lifetimes, most probably, and yet I think that his... what he was reaching out for. You know, my mother would take his hand, and he would just keep reaching, because he was not reaching for a human hand. He was reaching for his way home, as you said. So it does seem to me that there's order to this. You know, we look at the world and we think, oh, there's no order here. It's just absolute chaos. But underneath it, I think this rhythm of order is extremely strong, and that's the way we're going to get through this time of challenge and deep provocation, because we're all being provoked in different ways, aren't we? And so it's this feeling of, okay, so where's that internal order? And nature gives it to us, waterfalls give it to us, the shower, you know, will give it to us, and the sense of grounding, putting our feet on the earth, and just feeling that underneath all of this, there is a stability that comes from home, or the design, or the swing between worlds, or whatever our ideas are, that will help us to ground during this time. And all the lifetimes that we've lived, I mean, I remember when I was writing the Mary Magdalene book and thinking that there's a chapter called My Passing, and it really talks about all the times that she remembered when she didn't support the earth and respect the earth, and when she did, and when she did all these different kinds of experiences in life. And it just feels to me like we come here, you know, you said before that oneness was taking a time off, but I really wonder if oneness isn't exploring itself in learning and teaching that we do, because many times people will come to me and they'll say, well, I have a relationship with this person and it's really not working, and I want it over, and I don't know what to do. And I'll say, well, what's your agreement? And they'll say, well, I don't know. And I'll say, well, okay, sit across from them in a visualization and ask their soul, okay, so let's have this agreement made conscious so that both of us understand what it is. I'd like to teach myself what you're teaching me, and I'd like you to teach yourself what I was supposed to be teaching you. I'd like to have that null and void at this point, so that I can move on with what I want to do, because this agreement is coming to an end, and I'd like us to both act as if that were the case. And as we begin to understand what those agreements are, the oneness is right underneath. It's never gone. You know, it's like we talk about all the time, the soul's always there, the heart's always there, and we do these processes, you know, in soul support systems. One is called circuitry alignment, where you go up into this swing between worlds and you actually get your pattern and bring it back down into your soul. Not that your soul doesn't have it, but it's refreshing it, it's renewing it, it's expanding into it, and so forth. And people will say, well, you know, how am I going to maintain this? And I say, by thinking about what just happened and re-experiencing it. Because once we experience something, we can then re-experience it. We can say to ourselves, okay, so that's my focus. My focus is going to be on this part of my life, or that part of my life, or this experience I had versus that experience I had, because I want this one experience to be foundationed. I want to grow and expand myself in this way, and I've resolved that other. So I'm going to put my energy where it is that I want it to be magnified. And so I think we're actually expanding and exploring and grounding oneness into this planet, and we're creating this beautiful gateway up and down, a column of consciousness that's growing and expanding as our awareness does. And as we remember more and more about being light, then the pathway's illuminated, so it's easier to get up and down. It's easier to understand where we are and where we're going and what that's about. And it gives us a place. You know, a lot of times I think, well, I live in Vermont, and, you know, I do mostly phone work at this point, you know, and I think about it in terms of I'm creating a place around me where I have nature and I have this experience of being in the consciousness that I'm endeavoring to live in my life inside. And this idea of the inside and the outside matching, that once we focus inside on that seed of light and open that space, then we actually have an opportunity to send that out in a circle and start to create that environment that is consonant or congruent with who we are. So it's exciting to me, because the oneness is something that I can note in my experience and I can understand from consciousness, but now I can also feel in my body. And the more soul experience I have, the more easily I'm able to go to that place. And what it helps me do is deal with stress. It helps me deal with you know, all of the things that I have on my plate right now, which are, you know, basically family oriented, but you know, very, very strong challenges. And so I know for myself there's only one strong point that really is going to hold me through this, and that's my experience with my own soul. And knowing that whatever I'm here to do in the family is going to be an outflow of my purpose in life. Every place I go, there's an outflow of my gift. And everybody has a gift, and everybody has that outflow, and all they need to do is really, you know, and there's on my website, there is an instruction in terms of how to get into the seat of light, how to work with the soul, and also the birthing prayers that we can read to our children and our newborns. And we actually read them to each other sometimes as adults, because remembering that we're light then puts us into a perspective of, oh, I came here for the purpose of giving a gift and making steps to support my understanding of what the light is. And as that unfolds more and more and we learn more about it, we have more space in our bodies and in our consciousness to be able to say, oh, okay, this is happening. All right, let me breathe into that soul space. Let me expand that out in a circle around me, and let me see how I can impact my environment. Anyone who deals with anything in the world, really, people or nature or even their own thoughts, has an opportunity to use the peaceful origin of the one that is reflected in the soul seed and the seed of light to affect their life in a positive way. And it doesn't take a lot of education or experience. Once we drop into that space, a lot of it for me anyway is just dropping down to my body, you know, because when I get stressed I go right up into my head. I think most of us do.
We do.
and we vacate the vessel.
Yeah.
So there's nobody home. There's no place to get, you know, there's no way to get there. So the seed of light information, and we do this also, this journey called soul recognition, which I was out in California actually in January, and we had a soul recognition then. I'm doing a lot of work in England now with this particular part of our work, and it's extremely beautiful because it's witnessed in a group. You know, we go into the soul seed, we expand out into the universe, and we bring all of that into our body, and then we have a community where we're completely and totally accepted, and we're able to be whoever we are and let whatever is on top of the soul come off. And, you know, the anger and the grief and the terror, that's all on top of the soul. Anytime we're feeling that, it's a message that we're not in the soul, and that's all it is, really. It's just energy, right? So
yeah.
as we move in more and more, you know, this idea, I think your question about the oneness, I just feel to me that it's a place where I can actually, you know, how we were just watching one of the PBS specials recently about, you know, the going to the moon and all of the expeditions to that, and it's putting your marker in the soul and saying, you know, I claim the space for my own. And this is where I'm going to come when I have a problem, when I don't know what to do, when I'm afraid, when something I've done hasn't worked, when I'm overwhelmed, even when I don't have enough money. It's the place where the universe can resource us, you know, because everything really comes from the universe anyway. So
yeah.
If we're more in touch with the universe, then all those things start to happen. And I know for myself, I keep every day, it's more and more about how can I be inside versus reacting to what's outside.
Mm.
And how can I take what I know from inside and apply it to my environment, you know, just to make it energetically compatible with what I know inside, so that my outside and my inside are vibrating at the same rate of speed or have the same frequency or however we want to think about that. And I keep thinking about people who have to go to offices and sit in traffic in California and all these kinds of ideas. You know, this is our life.
Yeah.
It's the most complicated time that we've ever had. You know, you have to remember 20 passwords and combinations, and there's just, you know, you don't have access anymore to a friendly environment. You know, you go into the post office and they want your license, you know.
Yeah.
They don't know you. Nobody knows you in
yeah.
the same way.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that an experience that maybe I didn't quite get the non-judgmental aspects of it, if you will. But I walked into a bank and I was going to cash a check that was written on that bank, on a check put out by that bank. But they refused to cash the check, not because I didn't have an account, but because it wasn't written on a check from their branch.
Oh, my goodness.
And so as I'm leaving, the woman, the greeter, the Walmart greeter, if you will, said, "Have a nice day," to which, and this goes to my judgment, "have a nice day," I said, "I will as soon as I get out of this bank."
Yeah.
And but it goes to what you're saying about the complexities of our world today. I mean, even I can think back to not just when I was a kid, because, you know, that's easy. Life was simple back when I was a kid. But even 10 years ago, or even 15 years ago, before computers were permeating our lives, I'm able to conference call you with someone else on a phone and carry on a three-way conversation, and there are no wires. And I can walk up and down the street and travel and carry on this conversation. I couldn't do that 10 or 15 years ago. So, and of course, I could also probably even at the same time, if my phone is designed correctly, I could then even send a text to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And some would say it's the brave new world. I don't know about that, but nonetheless, this is where we live. As you said, this is where we live. And you have a situation going on in your life as well. And I'm curious how you put that whole spin, as you've shared with us, on this one experience with this little baby with the heart condition.
Mm. Well, my son and his wife have just had a baby in September, and it was born by an emergency C-section. She went in that day for a checkup and an ultrasound, and they knew something was challenging because she had a placenta previa, which meant the placenta wasn't seated properly and the baby wasn't getting nourished properly. And when she went in, the baby had no amniotic fluid around it, and so they of course had to immediately do surgery. Now that saved her life. She would not have lived otherwise. She was 4 pounds 5 ounces. And she was put into Boston Children's, and then she's been in Elliott now for 5 weeks, I think it was, and she's been home about 10 days now. And she was born with 3 holes in her heart. One has healed spontaneously, and the other two, one is through between the ventricles, and it's a ventricular septal defect. And that basically means that the oxygenated blood and the deoxygenated blood are mixing. So they're wanting her to have open heart surgery, and this is going to be the day after Thanksgiving. And what I'm doing, Richard, is recognizing one very important thing, which sometimes it's hard for me to recognize, and that's that my daughter-in-law and my son have their karma. They have their path. They have what it is that they have agreed to learn. And the thing that's happening with this child is that she's bringing a lot of love to her and into the environment, and she has this capacity. I did what I call a thought waveform on her, which is, I guess we have time to go into one of my family stories. my grandmother was aphasic, which means she could not really speak sentences, and she was in a nursing home, and this is back in about 1984. And I was sitting across from her one day, and she had wanting to tell me something, and she starts a sentence, and then she would stop, and she would start and stop, and she's getting so frustrated. And as I looked at her, I saw about a quarter-inch lime green band of energy coming around from her left side of her head and into the center of her forehead and stopping. Mm. And every time she'd try to say the sentence, this lime green band would come around, and it would stop right there. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm like 5 years into metaphysics, right? I thought to myself, well, how about psychically if I just finished that circle, if I took it from her forehead in the center and I took it around to the right side of her brain and then I took it around to the left side again and made a circle. Well, I did that psychically, and she spoke the sentence. Okay, so it freaked me out. I didn't do much with it after that because I thought, oh, this is just too invasive. But what it got me thinking about was the fact that we have a thought wave.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done over the years is I can plot thought waves for people that will basically tell them how their brain works. So I've been working with children who have trouble learning and challenges learning, and and some autistic kids I've worked with, and different conditions that we have that we label different things, to see what the brain wave pattern is, how does it work, and how does it function. So I went into my granddaughter's thought wave form, and I did a little investigation there. And what I found out, Richard, is that she has a left brain that's very slotted. In other words, if you have what I do is I make a form. So let's imagine figure eight on its side, and on the left side, there's these slats. Okay, so she's thinking something, and then she's going on to something else and something else. It's like a shutter, one little line after the other, and then the right side is completely open. Some people's thought waveforms have energy in the right and the left. Everyone's different. But with hers, what she's doing is she's going into her left brain. In other words, she's looking around her at reality. She's picking up what people need and what their challenges are. She's going to the right side of her brain, which is our creative side and our universal side, going to that spiritual energy. She's pulling what's needed, and she's coming back and giving it to whomever it is, and then she's picking up the next little line on that shutter, and then she's going back out. And so she's been using a lot of her energy to actually support other people.
Wow.
And she's here to do service. She's here to do an amazing amount of bringing blessings and joy and grace back to humanity.
That's fascinating.
So no matter what she's physically doing, you know, what I've been working with her is, your heart can be open without having holes in it, you know?
Yeah.
You can have an open heart,
and
you can work as this person who does service, but you can also sustain yourself.
Yeah.
Because she has, you know, she has trouble eating and gaining her own strength because she's using so much energy to support others. And I know that somehow there's a story, as you of course know,
mm-hmm.
to everything. Everybody has their story, and that's her story.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is I'm supporting what I can here physically with them, and I'm also holding her. I'm doing the circuitry alignment that I talked about before, holding her soul right around her body and helping her to nourish herself from her soul so that she can take that energy and use that. And then the other thing that was recommended, there's always a recommendation and kind of a best course of treatment at the end. So what we're also doing is putting a lot of golden light around her. And so when she's trying to do physical things like suck and bring energy into her mouth so she can actually feed, putting a lot of gold energy around her body and around her consciousness. And I've given this thought wave form to both my son and my daughter-in-law. My son is a facilitator of soul recognition, so he understands how this all works. And they're using that understanding to support her metaphysically, as well as doing all the medical things that need to happen.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge, you know, when you have physical, emotional, mental things, and then you have the spiritual energy, working the spiritual energy into our lives is sometimes our last step, and in my opinion, should be our first.
Yeah.
And it's not that I always use it first. I'm not saying it that way. I'm just
right.
saying that we're not inculcated. We're not taught.
Right.
Well, the first thing you do is you go home. The first thing you do is remember the oneness and remember the light and remember the love. And the first thing you do is remember that you're cherished.
Exactly.
No matter what you do.
Yeah.
And we're always judged by, well, you didn't do it this way and you didn't do it that way. And why wasn't this and why wasn't that? And, you know, we go so far away from what the truth about ourselves really is, that we're really divine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Flo, I want to thank you so much for sharing with us today and taking time to do that and to being part of the program, and look forward to having you back again next year as we are going to be in 2012, and it's going to be a pretty incredible year, to say the very least. This one's been pretty incredible as it stands for me personally, and I'm just very excited about, you know, what we have to look forward to.
Me too.
Flo Magdalena, and your website is soulsupportsystems.org. People can get more information, contact you, find out about workshops, your programs, your books, and this upcoming film that we only touched upon briefly, and we encourage people to do that.
Thank you very much, Richard, for this opportunity.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I encourage you to join us every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we encourage you to check out the archives at the radio show's page. Until next Saturday at this time, love to all.